We're now in chapter 7 of the Bhagavad Gita, and the chapter is called Jnana Vijnana Yoga. Jnana is knowledge, Vijnana is wisdom. What is the difference between knowledge and wisdom? Knowledge is knowing the, what we call the form God, the God with form, the God who we can worship in form, that we can offer flowers to, that we sing bhajans to, that is in our altar, in our temples, that is called knowledge. But to understand the higher form of God, which is actually formless, has no form, has no attributes, for that one requires wisdom. Thus, this chapter 7 deals with both knowledge of the form and wisdom to understand the formless. So in this chapter, Krishna tells us about the very nature of God. And he said that God has got two natures. One is called apara prakriti or lower nature. What is the apara prakriti? And one is the para prakriti or higher nature. And what is the apara prakriti made of? Five elements plus five elements, ether, air, fire, water, earth, plus mind, intellect and ego. That is the lower nature of God. And the higher nature is what? The very life principle or the essence that supports the entire creation. So that Krishna explained to us in the verses 4 and 5 of this chapter. 4, 5 and 6. Then in verses 8, 9, 10 and 11, in these 4 verses, Krishna gave us 12 examples how he appears in his creation as both the lower and the higher nature. One of the examples he gave us was Raso Aham Apsu. Apsu means water. In all the waters, I am the very rasa, or what we call the nourishing factor. So water is that which is visible, which is tangible. That is the apara prakriti, the lower nature of God. In that lower nature of God, there is a higher nature which is the capacity to nourish us. So even in water, there is the divinity of the Lord, the higher and lower nature. Then he gave us another example, Prabhas Asmi. Asmi, I am the Prabha, meaning the effulgence, in what? Sakshi, the moon, and Surya, the sun. So again, the sun and the moon are the lower nature of God. The essence of the moon and the sun is the capacity to give the brightness or the effulgence. That Krishna says, that is my higher nature. That means what this tells us, that slowly we start first by appreciating God in one particular form. We may worship God in Shiva form, in Krishna form, in Ganesha form. That is generally how we start our worship, which is called what? What do you call this type of worship? Eka Bhakti. Eka Rupa Bhakti, where you worship God in a particular form. Whatever form it is, you worship God in a particular form. Eka Rupa Bhakti. But what is this chapter teaching us? From Eka Rupa Bhakti, we must come up to Aneka Rupa Bhakti. That means what? We can worship God in anything in creation. In the sun, in the moon, in the rain, in the water, whatever, because God is available in the whole creation. He can be worshipped through the creation. So we progress from Eka Rupa Bhakti to Aneka Rupa Bhakti. So 12 different examples Krishna gave us from verses 8, 9, 10 and 11. And then what did he say in verse number 12? We have covered up to which verse? 16. Okay. So I'm just flashing back what we have covered last week. Huh? So in verse number 12, he explained to us that because of the three qualities in all of us, in all of nature, in all of creation, what are the three qualities? Sattvic, tamasic and rajasic. Because of these three qualities, which are in which part? In apara prakriti or para prakriti? Apara prakriti. In our lower nature, meaning in our body, in our mind, in our intellect, there are these three qualities, sattvic, rajasic, tamasic. Because of these three qualities, we perceive the world in a different way, depending on which of the three gunas is predominant in us. So because the three gunas are in us, they are in all creation, this whole creation, although it is made of eight, all of us are made from eight components, yet why do we all appear different? We look different, we have different complexion, we have different height, shape, our thoughts are different, the way we speak is different, our desires are different. It is because of the three gunas. And thus these three gunas dictate the way we think, we speak, we behave. And Krishna says, these three gunas which are also in creation, make the creation colorful. We find that everything in nature has different colors, it is attractive, and it has different shapes, sounds, etc. Now therefore, what Krishna is trying to tell us here in verse number 13 and 14, he says, since God has got two nature, lower nature and higher nature, why is it that all of us are so fixated on the lower nature of God? We worship God in form, but we cannot come to the higher nature of God. What is the reason? Why is it that we find it so difficult to uplift ourselves and move away from worship of form to worship of formless? He has given us the answer in verses 13 and the remedy in verse 14. Why is that? So, what is Maya? What is Maya? We always talk about Maya. How does Maya delude us? Why are we so engrossed in this world? Temporary pleasures, because the world is attractive, it is because of the three gunas, it attracts our attention. We are so taken away by the world. So there's so much entertainment, there's so much pleasure, there's so much variety in the world. So all the while we are now fixated in this manifest world, which offers a lot of opportunities for entertainment and pleasure, etc. So what does Krishna say in verse 14? This Maya of mine, this illusion, which is called Maya, illusion, why? Because it is constantly changing, it is never permanent, it is subject to change, it is subject to arrival and departure, yet we are so focused, we are so fixated on it. Krishna says, this divine illusion of mine is hard to conquer, it is very difficult because it is so attractive. And it takes away our time and attention. We are chasing for money, we are chasing for power, we are chasing for position, we are chasing for possessions, everything in this world. So we find it very difficult to detach ourselves and focus on the higher nature of God. But He has given us a solution. What is the solution? What is the solution? Take refuge in me, which means what? Surrender means what? Bhakti, have devotion to me. He says, start first with devotion. And that devotion also is of three levels that we have to go through. As I explained just a while earlier, the first level of devotion is called what? Eka Bhakti. Eka Rupa Bhakti. where our devotion is to one form of God. Then he says, come out of Eka Rupa Bhakti, go to Aneka Rupa Bhakti. Try to appreciate me in everything in creation. Wherever you see, I am there, I am all pervading. Try to appreciate me in everything in creation. Have devotion to anything in creation is having devotion to God. And then only you can come to Arupa Bhakti, which is understanding my unmanifest nature. That is the highest nature of Lord, which is got no attributes. So Krishna says, with devotion, it is possible. And I told you last week that when you have devotion to God, the more devotion you have to God, what are the two qualities that you cultivate? Detachment, that is vairagya. Detachment to what? The more devotion you have to God, what type of detachment? You get distaste for the world. All the pursuit of all the energy which is being taken away by pursuit of so many worldly pleasures and things, you automatically find that you are no more interested in them. The more your devotion to God grows, the more you find that you are not interested in all these worldly pursuits. Now, it does not mean that you don't do your duties and responsibilities. But what is the difference? This does not mean that you run away to an ashram and sit down the whole day. You are still engaged in the world, you are still doing your duties and responsibilities, but what does this mean? What do we mean by surrender? All the worldly responsibilities and duties you carry on, but they become secondary to you. Your primary goal in life becomes what? To attain God. So it does not mean that you abandon or give up your duties and responsibilities, but all these duties and responsibilities become subservient to your primary goal in life. Your primary goal in life becomes moksha. Whereas previously, your primary goal in life is what? Money, power, possession, position. And what happens to your spiritual goal? It becomes your secondary goal. So if you are invited for a party or a spiritual talk, where do you go? Where do you go? You answer that yourself. Okay? Everybody has got different interests. So that becomes your priorities in life. Where you give priority? You take care of both your responsibilities and duties, but you give priority to your spiritual growth also. So Krishna says then, there are two types of people, two categories of people. The first category he mentioned in verse number 15 that we discussed last week. He called this category of people Duskritino. They are the evil people. They are totally not interested in God. They are totally not interested in scriptures. They have no interest on the spiritual path. And thus he calls them as Naradama. Nara means human beings. These people who pursue power, position, have lust for everything. They have anger, they have lust, they have ego. They pursue everything. They consider themselves to be the most supreme human beings. But God says they are Nara Adama. Nara means human being. Adama means what? They are the lowest of all human beings. Why? Why are they the most lowest of all human beings? They who think that they are the greatest of human beings, Krishna calls them the most lowest of all human creation. Sorry? Why? Deluded to what? Okay. What are they deluded to? They are deluded to the very goal or the very purpose of human life. The purpose we have attained this human birth, after going through so many types of births, we have finally got the good fortune to attain human birth, but unfortunately they don't understand the purpose of human birth is to attain God. Thus, they waste their whole lives in pursuing all kinds of worldly pleasures. So they are the Nara Adama. On top of that, he calls them Asuram. They are Muda, they are deluded, they are also Asuram. They are like demoniac people. Why? Because the more and more they pursue their desires, their selfish desires, due to their lust, due to their greed, due to their anger, eventually what happens? The mind is able to project all kinds of desires. The physical body is unable to keep up with all the desires or the demands of the mind. Then what happens? Then they take to adharma. They take to shortcuts, corruption, bribery, etc. to reach their, to satisfy their desires as quick as they can. So these are the people who are not at all interested to know about God. But he says there is another category of people, verse number 16, which he calls the Sukritino, virtuous people, good people. But he says these good people are also of all types. So it's not necessary that just because you're virtuous or good that you will achieve moksha. Because these virtuous people are also of all types. The first type he said is what? Artha. Artha is what? What type of person is Artha? They are also good people, but what type of people they are? Sorry, Artha is the devotee in distress, the crisis bhaktas, those who remember God at times of problems. But he calls them virtuous people. Why? Because even when they have crisis, he says, at least they come to me, they pray to me, they seek my help. But the problem is what? After the crisis is over, they forget God. And when the next crisis comes, they remember God. So they are good bhaktas, but they are only up to that level of remembering God in terms of times of crisis. Then he says, I have another type of devotee, which is called the Arthati, who comes to me but seeks only wealth or power or position or fame or whatever it is. So the first type of bhakta prays to God to remove his troubles or remove something from his life. The second type of bhakta, Arthati, prays to attain something in life, power, position, money, etc. And both these type of bhaktas are called the Sakama bhaktas. Sakama means they pray with some desire. Kama is desire. Sakama means with desire they worship God. Then he says, I have a third type of devotee, which is called the Jignyashu. Jignyashu is, he worships God. He is not interested in worldly returns, but he only wants one thing, that is knowledge. So that is a different level of devotee, who wants not worldly benefits, he has no obstacles to be removed, but he wants to attain spiritual knowledge. And then Krishna says there is another devotee which is called Jnani, man of knowledge. What is the difference? What does this man of knowledge want? The Jignyashu also only wants God.
There's a man who's a wealthy man, okay, who was going to overseas, he had 4 wives. So he asked the fourth wife what he wants. He said, I want to see all of jewelry in that place, in India, and his wife. The second lady said, the third wife said, buy all the books that I need.
Knowledge.
And the other one was
second.
I'm very sick. Then he will find the medicines and all that. And the other one, the first wife said, I don't want anything,
you will
come back. So he brought
all the things for the
what
do you want
to? And he went and stayed with the first wife. And the other three were jealous. But
he's
the only lady
who wanted to see. So what's the moral of the story? Don't have 4 wives. Have 1 wife. So what is the difference between the Jnani and the Jignyashu? The Jignyashu seeks knowledge of God, that means he wants to attain God also. But what is the Jnani? What's the difference? He doesn't even ask for anything. He is already a man of knowledge. He has already achieved Jivan Mukti. He doesn't even ask anything from God. He has totally surrendered everything for God. In fact, even moksha also he doesn't want. Why? Because he is already a Jivan Mukta. He has already attained moksha also. So this one doesn't even ask anything. He surrenders totally his life to me. So that means there are four types of virtuous people. Here Krishna has given. Now there is one way of understanding this verse. The other way to understand it is that we can also go through these four types of devotees. We can go through these four types of stages. We all start normally by being what? Artha Bhakta, right? To remove some obstacles. Then we also are Arthati. We normally want something in life. We want a promotion. We want something, lottery ticket to strike or something like that. We want something in life. Now this is considered, as I explained to you last week, we call it as Manda Bhakta. Manda Bhakta means the very starting point for a devotee, where you approach God to ask Him to remove something or bring something to your life. Manda Bhakta. Now why would one want to progress from that? Why would one want to go away from being a Manda Bhakta? Why would you want to stop being a Manda Bhakta? Or what would make you want to stop being a Manda Bhakta? Just keep on. It is not wrong. Eh? He's saying it's okay. You are also a devotee. He calls you a Sukritino. You are a virtuous person. But he has also presented to us another level of devotee who approaches God only for knowledge. Now what will make us move away from Manda Bhakta to Madhyama Bhakta? The Jignyashu, the one who approaches God for knowledge, is a Manda Bhakta, a Madhyama Bhakta, a middle level Bhakta. Why would one want to move away from Manda Bhakta? Only when you come to understand that whatever I ask from God, eventually again what happens? I am never happy. Whatever I keep on asking, for years and years I have been asking and asking and asking, and I realize that still I am unhappy. So there has to be a higher goal in life. So I want to attain that higher goal. Only when we come to this understanding that we become a Madhyama Bhakta. Where in Manda Bhakta, God is the means and the world is the goal. Right? God is the means, the world is the end or the goal. In Madhyama Bhakta, God is both the means and the end. And then you become a jnani, which is called Uttama Bhakta. What is the difference? God is neither the means nor the goal, but God is me, myself. Until I realize that my nature and the nature of God is one and the same. So you move from world dependence. Initially you are dependent on the world. Then you move to God dependence. Then from God dependence you move to self-dependence. That is the journey of a seeker. We move from world dependence to God dependence, from God dependence to self-dependence. When we realize that Aham Atma Asmi, the very nature of me, my very nature, is the same as the nature of God. Aham Brahma Asmi, Aham Atma Asmi. So these are four levels also. We may have to move through these four levels until we come to the highest level.
Does Manda Bhakti create bondage also? I mean, let's say you ask him again, isn't that also creating a bondage?
Yes. You're talking about Manda is not, that is Madhyama. Madhyama is for knowledge. Manda is the Artha and Arthati.
So that creates a bondage also.
Correct. Even the Madhyama also creates a bondage.
Yes. So the third one,
Uttama? Uttama Bhakti is the Jnani. The one who asks for nothing.
So that's no bondage.
No bondage. Because you have nothing to ask for. So therefore, a jignyashu. Okay, so okay. So a Jignyashu Bhakta also prays to God. But what does he pray for? The one who seeks knowledge prays for purity of mind, prays to attain knowledge. And then only we come to the level of Jnani. So now we have been presented with four types of devotees of God. Obviously, when you are given four choices, what is your next question? When I give you four choices, which is your, what is your next question? Which is the best, right? Which is the highest? Which is the most superior? So that question Krishna answers in verse number 17. That is human nature. When we are given comparison, we want to know which is the shortest goal, shortest route, fastest, which is the best, which is the most tastiest. So now here Krishna says in verse 17, Tesham, of these four type of devotees described in verse number 16, Jnani Vishishyate, the man of wisdom, Jnani Vishishyate means excels, is the most superior among all the four. Among the all four levels, the Jnani is the most superior. Now this makes a very important point here, because there is a common tendency for many people to think that as long as I have bhakti to God, as long as I have devotion and love to God, why do I need knowledge? Why is knowledge so important? Whereas here Krishna is telling us that unless and until you come to knowledge, you are not a superior devotee. So here the concept or the introduction of knowledge, Krishna is trying to make us understand that eventually from bhakti we have to come to knowledge. The culmination of our spiritual journey has got to be knowledge. Initially you can practice karma yoga, you can practice upasana yoga, but ultimately you have to come to knowledge. And what do we mean by knowledge? How do you define this jnana yoga, the path of knowledge? How do you define jnana yoga itself? We know jnana yoga leads to liberation, to moksha. How would you define jnana yoga? I've given you the definition before.
Knowledge of the self.
Okay, knowledge of the self, but what else? It is systematic and consistent learning of the scriptures. Two words are systematic, consistent. I emphasize consistent. Study of the scriptures under the guidance of a competent master for a period of time. That is the definition of Jnana Yoga. Systematic and consistent study of the scriptures under the guidance of a competent guru for a length of time. So it requires dedication, it requires commitment, it requires sacrifice. So Jnana Yoga is not to be taken lightly also. And this Jnana Yoga deals with both the Saguna, that means the form, the worship of God with form, plus Nirguna, the worship of the formless. So both we know in totality. That is what Krishna told Arjuna in the very first verse of this chapter 7. He says, I will give you Jnanam and Vijnanam, knowledge of form and formless. Once you have this knowledge, you will know me in totality. You will know me in full. There is nothing beyond that to know. Once we know God in form and formless. So, in fact, in the Mundaka Upanishad also, it is very clearly stated that this knowledge also, in fact, the word Mundaka means one who has a shave, a bald head. But here it does not mean that we all have to shave our heads to attain moksha, but it just tells us that it is a level of commitment and dedication we have to this knowledge. So in the Mundaka Upanishad it is given that first this highest knowledge was taught by Brahman. Brahman means the absolute, the unmanifest God. He first gave this knowledge to Lord Brahma, the creator. That means what? When creation came about, this knowledge also was already given to mankind. That's why this knowledge is so important. And what did Brahma do? Brahma gave it to his son called Angiras. Angiras is said to be born from the mind of Lord Brahma. Angiras in turn taught this to Saunaka, and it's very important to note this, because who was Saunaka? Saunaka is described as a householder. So this knowledge is not for just Swamijis to sit in ashram and learn, or when we give up everything we go to ashram. It is meant for a householder, how to acquire this knowledge and live life according to the scriptures, according to what God has ordained. As you all know, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is giving this knowledge to who? Arjuna. Who is Arjuna? He is not only a warrior, a man of action, but also a householder. He is not a sannyasi, he is a householder. So knowledge which is very applicable to us as householders. We must not think that this knowledge is restricted only to sannyasis. And this knowledge also in Mundaka Upanishad is divided into two categories. One is called Paravidya. Paravidya means higher knowledge. And one is called Aparavidya, which is lower knowledge. So knowledge is classified into two categories. Now what is Paravidya? What is called higher knowledge? Higher knowledge, it is said in the Mundaka Upanishad, is that by which the immortal goal or moksha, through knowledge one becomes aware of the existence of the unmanifest Lord and reaches that goal called moksha. That is called higher knowledge in the Upanishads. One attains a state of immortality when we understand that the Lord is all-pervading. And what is the lower knowledge? Lower knowledge is called as dharma adharma sadhana, which means that knowledge about virtues and vice. What is wrong we shouldn't do? What are the vices we shouldn't do? What are the virtues? What are the good deeds that we should do? And it deals with prayers, rituals, right method of chanting mantras. All this is called lower knowledge. So that which we are, most of us are engaged in, most of us are doing, chanting mantras, following a life of dharma, avoiding vices, leading a life of virtue, all that is called lower knowledge. But ultimately we have to come to higher knowledge. But the Upanishad says both are important. One should not give up one and only come to higher knowledge. You have to start with lower knowledge and then come to higher knowledge. So why is that then called higher knowledge? Why is there a distinction between higher and lower knowledge? Both deal with God. Rituals, prayers, mantras also deal with God. Higher knowledge also deals with God. But why is that called higher knowledge? Why is there a distinction? Why is there a distinction? True, but then why is that called higher knowledge?
Rituals cannot purify.
Rituals do purify them.
Rituals
do purify them. It's got finite results. Whatever you pursue is called lower knowledge because it only gives you finite results. That is called higher knowledge because that is the only one that takes you to the infinite result called moksha. Whereas rituals, chanting or mantras can give you finite tangible results but cannot lead you to the infinite. So that's why that is called higher knowledge and this is called lower knowledge. So first of all, this verse itself removes a very great misconception that as householders we don't have to come to knowledge. As long as I have devotion to God, I go to temple, I pray, I chant mantras, I'm okay. One day I'll reach moksha. I don't need knowledge. No. Krishna says, among the four, who's the highest? Jnani Vishishyate. The Jnani excels. Now, question is, why does he excel? So he explains here. If you look at the first line, verse 17. Nitya Yukta. Because Nitya, this Jnani is Nitya, is constantly Yukta, is constantly united. Yukta means united. The mind of this Jnani is constantly in contact with God. So there is no distraction in this Jnani's mind. As I said, we have a primary goal and a secondary goal. To this jnani, the primary goal is to attain God. But that does not mean he gives up his secondary goals. So for a jnani, he has the primary goal as God in his mind. He is ever established. Mind is constantly established in God as the goal. Whereas for all other type of devotees, we are also, we have that affinity for God, but our goal is still comes back to worldly ends. So that's the difference between the jnani. He is ever established in me as the goal, whose mind is always engrossed in God. And that also, therefore, for such a jnani, God is never away from him. And Krishna will say, for such a jnani, not only God is never away from him, but I also am never away from my devotee. The jnani and God are one. And on top of that, this jnani, although his mind is engrossed in God, he is also eka bhakti. The word eka bhakti means one-pointed devotion. There is no confusion, there is no distraction in this jnani's mind. He has utmost devotion to God. Meaning what? He does not seek. What do we mean by a single-pointed devotion to God? Very important factor here. Eka bhakti, single-pointed, one-pointed devotion to God means what? What is the distinction here? When you have single-pointed devotion to God. Where do we seek our happiness, our security, our peace of mind? In the world. We search for peace, we search for security, we search for happiness in the changing world. But when this devotee has got eka bhakti, his peace of mind, his security, his happiness only rests on God. He does not seek it from the world. The world is a place for us to discharge our duties. To seek peace of mind, to seek happiness, to seek security, where should we be seeking from? From that which is not changing. And there is only one non-changing principle in this world, and that is God. So eka bhakti means he seeks his peace of mind, his security, his happiness from God. And thus he says vishishyate. That's why this devotee excels. And as I said, therefore we must not forget that we also have our worldly duties and responsibilities. And especially in the next chapter, if you look at chapter 8 verse 6, there's one very beautiful line there. That Krishna is explaining to Arjuna, verse 7. Page 152. Look at the second line of verse 7. It's a very beautiful line. One line that tells us how to lead our lives. Mam anusmara yudhyacha. Krishna is saying, keep me, mam, where? Anusmara, in your mind. Keep on thinking about me. The mind is constantly engaged in thoughts of God. But at the same time he says what? Yudhyacha, carry on fighting. Meaning what? Do your duty. Carry on doing your duties. Take care of your duties and responsibilities. But keep thoughts of God in your mind. So that thoughts of God in your mind is what will guide you throughout the day. So both he says is important. That's why the word cha. Cha means and. Mam anusmara cha yudhya. Think of me and fight. Think of me and do all your responsibilities and duties. Surrender everything to me, to my hands. So one beautiful line for us just to remember, we can go throughout the day and remember this. Mam anusmara yudhyacha. Mam, don't go and fight with people. Fight means doing your duty. Mam anusmara yudhyacha. So here he says, such a devotee. And one beautiful example we can take from the scriptures. Who is a perfect living example of Mam Anusmara Yudhyacha? Who? Sorry? Janaka. Yes, very good example. Samo? Who? Mirabai. Okay, very good. Devotion, full devotion to God. Who else?
Hanuman.
Right? Whole time the word Rama, Rama, Rama is on his mind. And he carries on doing his duty. Everything I do is for Rama. Hanuman never sought any glory for himself. Everything he did was for the glory of Lord Rama. Every action we do is for God. It's not for us. So, Maam Anusmara Yudhyacha. Such a devotee, Krishna says, coming back to verse 17, Priyohi Jnanina Athyartam. Athyartam means one is supremely, extremely priyo. Such a devotee finds me, this Jnani is so, he finds God so loving. He is so much attached to God. This devotee is totally engrossed, totally in love with God. So, not only is this Jnani a greatest devotee, because his devotion, what is the difference between the devotion of this Jnani compared to any other person's devotion?
Huh?
So, what is the difference? We are also all devotees of God. Jnani also is a devotee of God. What makes his devotion different? Unconditional. The word is unconditional. His devotion does not come with condition. We love people with condition or without condition. All of us. What are the conditions we love people? You must do whatever I tell you to do. The minute you don't do according to what I tell you, then what happens to my love? So therefore we love God whether He, the circumstances are favorable, whether the circumstances are unfavorable. I have nothing to ask of God. Whatever He gives me is what? Ishvara Prasad. So this devotee therefore, why he can love God? Whereas we also love God, but our love is conditional. When everything is going smoothly, I love you God. When there are problems in my life, why me God? So here he says, Priyohi Jnanina Athyartam. His love is supreme, is extremely loving to me. Because it is unconditional. And therefore Krishna also says, not only is his love for me supreme, but I also, aham sacha mama priya, I also love this devotee the utmost. Now we find, is there some discrimination in God? How come he loves this devotee more and he doesn't love the other devotee more? There seems to be some discrimination. So is it fair? Is it fair that he gives more love to this devotee and then he doesn't love the other devotee so much? And yet we say God is impartial. There is one verse in chapter 9, he says, Name Dvesho Name Priya. There is no person I hate more or no person I love more. But now he is saying, not only is that devotee loves me the most, I also love him the most. So how are we to understand this? Is God being discriminating? Like we have four children, we love one child the most. Is that fair? So what we have to understand here, when he says, that devotee loves me the most and I love him the most, it means between the devotee and God there is no distance. Because the devotee considers himself and God as one. So this love means there is no distance at all in that devotee and God. Whereas for all the other type of devotees, we consider God to be somebody else and we to be somebody else. There is a distance. For this devotee there is totally no distance at all. That closeness is the most superior. Okay. So now we go on to verse number 18. Now Krishna has said that Jnani is the most closest to me, but at the same time Krishna in his grace doesn't want the other devotees to feel inferior also. So he says that, what does he say here? Ete of these, all these type of four type of devotees, Eve Sarva Udhara, all are noble. So don't please think of yourself as an inferior devotee. He says all are noble. All four of them are good people, virtuous people. They are all noble. Sarva means all, Udhara means excellent. But the only difference is, he says, this Jnani is no different than myself. As I said earlier, there is no distance between the jnani and me. And we must understand this phrase which is always used. We say we must reach God, we must merge with God. Where is it that God is that we must merge with Him? Is God sitting somewhere far away that we have to travel to merge with Him? Where is this God? Everywhere and within ourselves. So this, when we say we merge with God, or the devotee, the jnani merges with God, is not a distance to travel. What does it mean? It is an attitude. It is the understanding that God and me are one. There is no travel involved. It is just your attitude to understand there is no difference in me and God. And once we see that divinity even in others, then there is no barrier between us and others also. Otherwise, we categorize everybody into different compartments, different colors, size, shape, religion, caste, color, etc. But when you only see that one divinity, there is no more distance between you and others. That is the similarity between this jnani and God. And the love is unconditional. So, that's why he says, Sahi Yukta Atma. If you look at the third line, Sahi, he is the Yukta Atma. Now there are two words here. Yukta Atma, here the word Atma does not mean soul. Atma here means mind. So for this person, why is he considered a exceptional devotee? Because Yukta Atma means his mind is steadfast. His mind does not waver. As I said, it is not an unconditional love. It is an unconditional love. His mind does not waver. Through thick and thin, through adverse and good situations, his mind is steadfast, fixed in total love for God. He is a committed mind, he is an integrated mind. So Yukta means a one with a committed, integrated, steadfast mind. Atma here means mind. And he is very clear as to the goal of human life. So here Krishna says, Mam Anuttamam Gatim Ashtita. Ashtita means this person is accepted. Ashtita means accepted what? Mam, me, meaning God, as the Anu Uttamam, as the excellent and the most superior Gatim goal. So one jnani is one who has accepted God as the ultimate, the superior and ultimate goal. Uttamam, the most supreme, the most highest goal. So all the goals of the other devotees are what? Limited and finite. A jnani's goal is for the ultimate and infinite also. Now the question is, how fast we can become a jnani, right? Since we aspire, we know this is the highest. The question is, of course, in everybody's mind, how soon can I reach this state of jnani, which is answered by Krishna in the next verse also. And Krishna says that he is going to take several lifetimes. It is not easy to reach this situation of a jnani where you can surrender everything to God and have that unconditional love for God. That through thick and thin, through good circumstances, through adverse circumstances, your love for God remains unshaken. So he says that one has to go through. And four sadhanas are very important, we must keep in mind. Four qualities in a devotee are very important. If you want to reach this goal, he is not saying it is impossible. It is possible, but it may take several lifetimes. Why several lifetimes? Why not one lifetime? Why several lifetimes?
Because one lifetime is not enough for you to reach the state of mind where you are prepared to become a jnani.
Okay, what else? Why several lifetimes? Bahunam janmanam ante. At the end of several births.
Your attachment is
how many lifetimes have we already gone through? How much of dirt and dust and you know, all the negative impurities we have piled on and piled on and piled on. So to wash away all this, you can't do it in one lifetime. So he's not trying to discourage us. What he's trying to tell you?
Can be done
and
start.
start immediately, right? Because the journey is long, so you better start immediately. Do not waste time. And therefore, four very important qualities we must consider. First of all is Shraddha, faith. We must have faith. It's a very important factor. In fact, if you recall in chapter 4, one very beautiful line he gave us, Shraddhavan labhate jnanam. Shraddhavan means the person endowed with Shraddha, the person who has faith, labhate attains what? Jnanam. If you have faith, you will attain that knowledge one day. But you must start with faith. So faith is a very important criteria on our spiritual journey. Faith in what? What should you have faith in?
Scriptures.
Faith in scriptures. That the scriptures are right, they are guiding you correctly. Faith in Guru. Faith in God. Faith in yourself. These four factors you must be happy. Faith in yourself, that you are committed, you will reach the goal. Faith in God. Faith in scriptures. Faith in the Guru. So Shraddha. Second is Bhakti. Bhakti means devotion. Continue to practice and have devotion for God. You have to build up this devotion. So bhakti is very important. One should not think that because I am pursuing knowledge that I don't need to have devotion for God. That devotion helps us on the path of knowledge. And two other very important qualities which we must cultivate. One is called Dhamma, D-A-M-A, which means have discipline of your senses. It's very important. Because most of the time we lead our life according to our senses. Our tongue, our eyes, our ears, they are running towards all the sense pleasures. If a person is leads his life by his senses, where is there time to devote for God, for spiritual practices? The first thing the mind gets up in the morning is thinking about what? What to eat. Where I have my lunch today, where what I'll eat for dinner today. And the ears are yearning for what? To hear gossip. So our senses are leading our life. They are leading our life. So Dhamma is one of the very important spiritual practices. Bring your senses under control. How do you bring your senses under control? Chanting, yes. So direct your senses, engage them in all types of spiritual practices. Keep your senses. Chant the name of God. Look at the form of God. Hear stories about God. Keep your senses engaged as much as you can. That's why in the most dangerous place where your senses run wild is where? When you're driving to work. Isn't it? Your mind and your senses are running all over the world. That's why they say what you should do, play one vision. Right? Put a picture of God in your car. At least your senses are not distracted. So samaha is control of senses. Samaha is the next quality, S-A-M-A, which means bring your mind under control also. Discipline of your mind. And again, this is where mantras help us. The word mantra comes from the word mana, which means mind. How to use the mantra to discipline your mind. And through study of the scriptures, one also disciplines the mind. And these have got to be done when? Not as a weekend hobby. Every day. Nitya Yukta, every day. So, Shraddha, Bhakti, Sama, Dhamaha, that will help us on our journey. So, now, the question is here, that also, whether we have the interest also to attain God, because not everybody is interested. So, supposing you are in the desert, you are lost in the desert, and you are extremely thirsty, you can't find water, and you pray to God, and God comes, and in one hand is holding bottle of mineral water, another hand is holding Bhagavad Gita. What are you going to say? Give me the water. So, first of all also, depends whether we have the thirst for God, whether we want to attain God. And that's why there was an episode here, when Swami Vivekananda, who was a disciple of Ramakrishna, he asked, all the while Ramakrishna was saying, it is so easy to attain God. He says, I have talked to God. It is so easy to attain God. And Swami Vivekananda then asked him, Sir, if you say it is so easy to attain God, why don't millions of people attain God? And his answer was, people cry for their children, people cry for money, people cry for fame, wealth, possession. How many people actually cry for God? So it is not that God is difficult to attain. It depends what we are crying for. If you are crying for worldly things, then that is what we will get. So when there are pains and problems in life, so many desires we have, definitely moksha is going to take a back seat. And that's why also we must understand why in our Vedas, in the Karma Kanda portion, yes, card number? 2072 and 2072. Yeah, can you please move your card? Okay, so that's why we have in the Vedas also two portions. One is Karma Kanda, one is Jnana Kanda. For those who are interested in attaining worldly benefits, there are prayers and rituals which are given to us in the Karma Kanda portion of the Vedas. You do this prayer, you will get this, you do this, you will get this. So you should take care of also your needs. But what do the Vedas say? Eventually you have to come out of this and go to the Jnana Kanda portion. Don't get stuck right in just the Karma Kanda. So here Krishna says, Bahunam Janmanam Ante. Janmanam, Bahunam, many, many, many Janmas. And Ante means at the end of many, many, many Janmas. Bahunam Janmanam Ante. Then only maybe somewhere there will arise from you a desire for moksha. Initially you may not have that. But if you proceed on this path diligently, and with dedication and commitment, and as you wipe away the negative dirt away from your mind through several births, you will come to that situation when there will be a desire for moksha. And we have seen this in the lives of Adi Sankaracharya, when at the age of 6 he told his mother, I am not interested in this world, I want to take up the life of sannyas. So also Ramakrishna, Paramahansa, etc. Many lives of saints and sages from the very young age. So one may question, how come at that age itself they got a desire for moksha? Why? Because they have already gone through the previous births and they have purified themselves. So when they attain this birth, immediately at the young age itself, they already had a desire for moksha. So, Jnana one, the one who... Okay, 1079 and Sister Saraswati, is it? Yeah. Okay, so Jnana one, this man of knowledge who reaches the fourth level after going through the different types of devotion to God, finally attains this highest level, Jnana one, and Mam Prapanyante, he adores me, he worships me. How? With unconditional love. So to go through this, it is going to take time. And how does he worship Lord? In 7502. So Mam Prapadyante, such a person after several lifetime comes to that desire for moksha, to worship me. And how does he worship Lord? So one of a very beautiful line in this verse, line number 3, Vasudeva Sarvamiti. Everything here, Sarvam, is nothing but God, who sees God in the entire creation. So Vasudeva here does not mean a person. Vasudeva here does not mean person. Vasudeva here means the unmanifest, the all-pervading consciousness. He sees the presence of God in everything at every time. Vasudeva Sarvamiti. So, one who does not worship a finite personal God, but one who has come to understand that God is all-pervading. So, here the word, there are two words, Vasudeva. Vasu, the word Vasu means Sat Rupam Brahma. Vasu here means Sat Rupam Brahma, which means that which is the truth. Sat means truth. So the very Rupam, which is the truth. When we say truth means what? How do you define truth? What is your definition of truth? That does not change. That was the truth same yesterday, that remains the truth today and tomorrow also will be there. Whereas everything else in this world is going through constant change. But in that constant changing world, there is one which does not change, and that is called God. So Vasu means that Sat Rupam Brahma. And what is Deva? Deva here means Chit or effulgence or consciousness. So that truth which does not change and which is full of effulgence, which is full of life. So that is what is called Vasudeva. Vasudeva Sarvam Iti. Everything here is pervaded by, is supported by that one unchanging consciousness. But Krishna says, one more warning to us. Saha Mahatma, Maha Atma, Maha means great, Atma means soul. Such a type of jnani who comes to this conclusion that Vasudeva Sarvam Iti, unfortunately, is what? Sudurlabha, very, very rare. It's not easy. So again, not to discourage us, but to tell us it is possible, but you have to be dedicated, you have to be committed to the goal. So as he told us, in fact, in this chapter, if you recall in the earlier verse 3, that many people do start very diligently on the spiritual path. I'm going to Gita class every Saturday. 1 week, 2 week, 3 week, suddenly disappear. So many people do have that diligence. I want to start, I want to do this. But what happens? Halfway the enthusiasm goes off. So it's not easy. We have to be dedicated, we have to be committed. And that's why I tell all the students, even if you don't want to come for this class, it's okay. But what you should do? Every day, at least read one verse of the Gita. If you do that, you don't have to come for this class. You will catch it. Catch knowledge by yourself. But you have to get that dedication into you, that persistence, that commitment into you. So, here Krishna has given us the problem of samsara because we are so engrossed in this world. We are pursuing all the time all our desires we are pursuing from this world that we lose sight of the eternity, of the eternal consciousness. And then he also gave us the remedy. So what is telling us here, that the problem of human beings is we seek three things in life from the world. We seek security from the world, we seek permanence from the world, we seek fulfillment from the world. So whose fault is that? Is it right for us to seek security from the world, permanence from the world, fulfillment from the world? How can the world, which itself is insecure, which itself is changing, how can you find fulfillment and security from that very world? So what he is telling us is just shift your direction of seeking. Shift your direction of seeking. It is not that we should not seek security or fulfillment. It is our direction of seeking is wrong. The problem is direction of seeking. So now, let's go on to verse number 20. Now, from verse number 20, Krishna is starting a new topic. Earlier he explained to us the problem of samsara, then he gave us the remedy of samsara. From now, this verse 20 to 26, he is dividing all the devotees into two types of devotees. Which is, one devotee is called Sakama Bhakti. Kama is desire. Sakama is with desire. And Sakama Bhakti, Krishna will tell us, there are plus points. It is not that it is wrong to have desire and worship God. But he is also going to tell us what are the negative points also. The second type of bhakti he will talk about in verses 27 to 30 is called Nishkama Bhakti. Nishkama means devoid of any desires. In Nishkama Bhakti, there are only advantages, there are no disadvantages. So, both type of bhaktis Krishna will compare. Now, what is the definition of bhakti? When we talk about bhakti, bhakti has got two components. When we talk about devotion to God, we must understand, one, it is not how many flowers you are offering, how many fruits you are offering to God. How do you define bhakti? You don't think that those people who are offering thousands of flowers to God, take buckets and buckets of fruit to God, or donate tons of money to God, that is called bhakti. How do you define true bhakti?
Intention,
the attitude is very important. Because it is the attitude that will lead you to the goal. With what intention you worship, that is what your destination will be. So attitude is very important, and the act of doing that worship also. So attitude plus act is very important. So Sakama Bhakti, what is the difference now in Sakama and Nishkama Bhakti? In Sakama Bhakti, the bhakti is used, the attitude of using bhakti is to accomplish finite goals in life. So that's why the attitude of a Sakama Bhakti and a Nishkama Bhakti is different. So what is Nishkama Bhakti? The attitude is to attain the infinite goal in life. That is the difference. And Krishna is going to say that both are okay, they are not wrong, but you should decide and choose now which one you want to follow. Another one more point we must understand, and this confuses a lot of people when they come to Bhagavad Gita, that in Bhagavad Gita there is symbolic language that Krishna is going to use from these verses onwards. So we must understand the importance of the symbolism. Now, when Krishna says, he's going to say, those who worship me come to me. Those who worship other gods go to other gods. Now we have to understand this very carefully, because many people then say, is Krishna the most superior ultimate god? And then Shiva, Vishnu, Ganesha, all are what we call secondary gods. So we have to understand the symbolism. Okay? Now, in the context of the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna says, those who worship me come to me, and those who worship devas, they go to the devas, what he means to say is, Krishna is a symbolism of the infinite goal in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna represents the infinite goal, whereas worship of all other devas represent the finite goal. So we must understand symbolism and not get carried away and not think Krishna means if you worship Krishna only then you will reach the infinite goal. No. He is a symbolic representation of the infinite goal. Now, if you take Shiv Purana, okay? Now supposing you leave aside the Bhagavad Gita. You take tomorrow the Shiv Purana, which is one of the 18 Puranas, and you open the Shiv Purana, what will you find? Shiva says, those who worship me will come to me, those who worship the devas will go to the devas. Which means what? In Shiva Purana, Shiva represents the infinite goal, and the other devas represent the finite goals. So that's what we have to understand. Because ultimately the infinite is beyond form and shape. Every form is limited to what? Time and space. When we are talking about infinite, it is beyond form. Only the formless is beyond time and space. So we must understand the symbolism. That's why we get confused when one person says Shiva is the main god, one says Krishna is the main god, one says Ganesha is the main god. Actually, all are symbolic representations. Ultimately, there is only one absolute god, that is called Brahman. If you look at the Upanishads, they only mention one name for God, that is called Brahman. But when we study the different texts, they approach it from that level. But we have to understand the difference between the finite and the infinite goal. So which deity you worship, the important thing is what is your attitude. Are you worshipping that deity for finite goals, then that deity becomes a finite devata. So the most important to understand is your attitude of worship also. So now let us look at verse number 20 here when he explains this. kame krita gana anya devata prapadyante. Anya, other devatas, anya devata, now is talking about those who worship other devas besides Krishna. Now, he says, when they worship other devatas besides me, it is what? There are some bhaktas, because of the karma, because of their desires, desire for what? Desire for karma, desire for artha, desire for dharma to attain heaven. If you want to attain heaven, there is also a shortcut. You know that? You don't have to come for Gita classes. There are many prayers in the Vedas which tell you how to do the prayers and attain the goal of heaven also. So if there are these devotees who have this kind of desire for dharma, kama, artha, either they want wealth or entertainment, prapadyante, they will worship anya devata. They will worship other devas. So what does other deva mean? Finite results. If you worship for finite results, you worship the devas, that is called sakama bhakti, that is with desire. Any deva that you worship, it depends on your motive. For example, if you only worship Lakshmi Devi, what does Lakshmi Devi become? Wealth, which is what?
Finite.
If you only worship Ganesha to remove obstacles in your life, what are you worshipping for? Finite results. That is what is to be understood. So, Krita Jnana, here the word Krita Jnana, if you look at the verse 20, the first line, last word there, Krita Jnana, means those who are devoid of their discriminative powers. Why? Because it is their desires that are driving their worship. They are not worshipping with wisdom. They are worshipping because they are driven by their karma, by their desires. Their desires have overpowered their discriminative power. And if you think about it, realistically speaking, why do you say that their desires, when have overpowered their discriminative powers, why are these people, what he calls here, uses the word wisdom has been carried away? Now, if you seriously think about it, every desire that they worship is what type of desire? They worship God for what type of desire?
Worldly
results, finite results. And what is a higher desire? Infinite desire. Now therefore, if you have reached an infinite goal, what happens to your finite desires? You are no more interested in them because you have got the ultimate, what they call in our scriptures, Purnatva. You are totally immersed in that devotion, in that love for God. There is no more thirst for anything. Yet these people, why he calls them devoid of discrimination? They spend so much of time, effort. We have to buy materials for the puja. We have to sit down for hours and chant mantras. We have to go to a certain place. So much of effort we put in just for what? Finite results. Imagine if you take that same time and effort for the infinite, what will you achieve? But these people give up the infinite in pursuit of the finite. So that's why Krishna calls them Rita Jnana. They have lost their sense of wisdom. Why? Because their desires have overpowered them. So they seek only the finite results. So he says, Tam Tam Niyamam Astaya. Niyamam means they use relevant methods, whatever which is prescribed in the scriptures. Asthaya, they follow. So whatever is required, if fasting is required, they keep fast. If certain materials are required to be offered, somebody tells you, go and offer 1,000 mangoes here, or go on Saturday and do this and do that, or go on Wednesday or Thursday, all kinds of rituals, rules, regulations are there. So they follow. They follow all these rules and regulations, but just to attain those finite results. So now, we have so many types of rituals, as you all know, in Hinduism, right? Depending on what we want to attain. So Krishna says now, Swaya Prakatya Niyata, under the guidance, Niyata, under the guidance of their own nature, because of their desires, they are driven by their own intense desires, and thus they follow all kinds of prayers and rituals to attempt to attain finite results. That is what he is pointing out now. He is talking about the Sakama Bhaktas, those who worship for finite ends. So in verse number 20, he talks about those people. They will undertake all kinds of rites and prayers and rituals just to attain the finite desires. Now, therefore, does it mean that if we do it, the prayers are not going to be answered? Yes, they are going to be answered. And he explains that in verse 21. In verse 21, he says, any Sakama Bhakta who wants to fulfill various desires, you follow the rules and regulations, you worship according to the rules and regulations. What happens? Bhakta yam yam tanum ashritum icchati. Icchati means with desire, the devotee, the bhakta, whichever form he chooses to worship, architum means to worship, okay? Whatever desire you have, whatever form you have chosen to worship, whatever materials you offer to do worship, if such a worship is done with what? Shraddha. It must be done with faith. So, with Shraddha, you must have faith. And if with faith you chant the right mantras, you offer the right, peace, you offer the right materials, you perform all the rituals, what will happen? He says, tasya tasya Shraddham aham achalam viddhadami. I will make your faith. If with faith you worship, Krishna says, of that devotee, tasya tasya, aham achalam, achalam means steady, viddhadami means I will make your faith steady. How does he make your faith steady? If with faith, Krishna says, you worship that devotee, follow the rules and regulations, do everything accordingly with faith, I will make your faith steady. How will he do that? By giving you what you want, isn't it? How will your faith be steady? How will your faith become stronger? Only when your prayers are answered, isn't it? So Krishna says, I will reinforce that faith by giving you what you have desired. As long as you worship with faith and you follow the rules and regulations. That's why you find certain temples, they get very popular. Because people say, I went there, I did this, 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 and it came out. What I worship for came out. Or certain person says, I went to this guru, I told him my problems, he told me do this, and my problems were removed. So, what does it mean? When your prayers are answered, your faith in that temple, in that guru, in that ritual becomes more stronger. So, that means what? Sakama Bhakti is a valid form of Bhakti. It is not wrong to do these rites and rituals to gain what you want. It does give you the benefits if it is done correctly. There is plus points to it also. Okay? So, your faith gets stronger, and thus, what happens when your faith gets stronger? So, here Krishna says, I will fulfill that desire. No matter which devata. Now again, when Krishna says, I will fulfill that, I will answer that prayer, that who is this I? He is the formless Brahman. It is not Krishna, it is the formless Brahman, that ultimate, that unmanifest, absolute reality. He says, I will fulfill that desire. I will make your wishes or your prayers come true. Again, if you look at standpoint of Shiva Purana, when Shiva says, I will grant all your wishes, what does Shiva represent? The unmanifest absolute reality. You must understand this very clearly. Then there is no confusion in our mind. Whoever we pray to, ultimately all our prayers are going to that one unmanifest absolute reality. So, which is called Aksharam Brahma. In chapter 8, we will come across this one beautiful chapter called Aksharam Brahma, which means the unmanifest Brahman, the ultimate Brahman. Okay? So, whichever God you pray to, Krishna says, I will answer those prayers and I will make your prayers come true and your faith will get stronger. Now, that is the positive point. But there is also a negative point, which we will come back next week and understand what is the negative aspect of Sakama Bhakti. Positive point is, with faith you pray, you offer the rituals, your prayers come through. But there are also certain negative points also, which we will come to understand before we go on to Nishkama Bhakti. Any question that is stage?
Vasudevasutam devam kansa chanura mardanam devaki paramanandam krishnam vande jagadu.